Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening.
My next guest is Ali Rodman. She is a professional learning consultant and founder of Learning Loop. Ali integrates her experience as a teacher, coach, school leader, and board member to design professional learning that is personalized, purposeful, and paradigm shifting. She is an ASCD faculty member and the author of Personalized Professional Learning, a Job-Embedded Pathway for Elevating Teacher Voice, published in 2019. She has also written for Educational Leadership, EdWeek's Classroom Q&A, and Edutopia. Welcome to the podcast, Ali.
Thank you so much, Dana. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, you write about something that I am very passionate about as well, professional learning and how we can do better basically with designing professional learning at our schools and districts. But we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's start out with the trench story. Ask everybody, tell me about a time you were in the trenches and managed to crawl out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think back to, it was my first or second year of teaching, and it was just one of those days, right? Best laid plans. You go into the classroom with this amazing, problem-based experience that you planned for students, and you find that half of the students haven't done the pre-work coming in. You need to do this differentiation on the spot to adjust. A couple of my students had a really, rough time the night before, and we're starting to get into a verbal argument. Mm-hmm. I had, believe it or not, another kid take a dry erase marker and kind of wedge it behind the whiteboard. So the board kept wobbling, and it was one of those days that when you look back in the scheme of things, probably was not that awful, but in the moment, just kind of makes your heart sink, right? They're the ones that when we add them up time and time again as educators are what contribute to some of the exhaustion and the burnout that we often see at all levels of the system. But I think, what helped me climb out of that experience and what continues to fuel my passion for professional learning today was the realization that so much of my classroom management training as a new teacher had been grounded in routines and processes and procedures and didn't tend the way that it needed to relationships. So in that moment, I began realizing that we needed to do a better job around professional learning to differentiate and personalize for our teachers in the same way that we were asking them to do for students.
Yeah, and you have the very same experience as myself in terms of my teacher prep program. Focus a lot on the routines, right? And the rules. And I'm, currently working on edits to a manuscript for a book that'll be out early next year. And, I write about that experience of, I started out teaching and giving students a list of rules. They didn't focus on relationships, like you said. And, that came with experience, right? But I made a lot of errors those first few years just because I was so focused on they needed to follow my rules, right? And it wasn't like I wasn't making those connections, and it took a little while for me to figure that out. So I'm glad that, that you came to that aha moment and then realized that, there are some things that need to be fixed with the system and personalized professional learning. So let's talk about your book, The Learning Loop for Personalized Professional Learning. You did have a website that talked about PD. So tell me kind of how the website evolved into the book.
Certainly. So I was still in the classroom as a teacher and engaging in some of my first administrative courses and was going through my administrative mentorship and started asking the what if questions, right? What if we did professional learning differently? What if it wasn't sort of the one size fits all sit and get, PD? And started dabbling in some different ways to potentially reimagine professional learning as a part of that administrative internship. I had an incredibly supportive leadership team that allowed me to kind of try some things out with small pilots of teachers and see what might work. And through that experience, I eventually started my own website, The Learning Loop, to be able to share some of those ideas and thoughts with others in the field to get their feedback, but also to begin amplifying and elevating one another's work to see what was working in different places and where we were hitting some roadblocks so that we could continue to, you know, kind of move the work forward and make it bigger to reach as many teachers as possible.
And that kind of shifted into writing the book, because you told me in a pre-chat you approached ASCD, and then you'd written a piece for Educational Leadership, their periodical. So how did that evolve into a book? What did you just collect a lot of the experiences that you had working with different schools? And did it come from your leadership experience, or, you know, several years of just trial and error? How did that evolve?
So it was honestly a combination of things, many years of trial and error of piloting different things in the field, both at my own school, which was a K to 12 school, as well as working with leaders across systems in different contexts that were different from my own. It came from a good amount of research in andragogy or adult learning, and really beginning to understand and deepen my understanding of the differences between how we go about designing and facilitating learning for students and how we might go about doing the same for adults, because unfortunately we tend to do them the same way, and that creates quite a mismatch in many cases. And then along with that, I was fortunate enough to have some amazing mentors of my own. So I cannot stress that, you know, mentor relationship enough for educators across the system. We, you know, look to our students to be learners, and we have a responsibility to model that constant learner, constant learning for them. So mentors have always been a big part of my continued development, both as a teacher and a leader. And that's how I was able to first approach ASCD with some of this work, first for Educational Leadership and then later as a book proposal, was through one of my mentors who had written for ASCD as well.
Okay. And then you talk a little bit about the fact that educators fall into two camps. Some of them are already personalizing their learning because they have facilitators, and some of them need more help in developing the learning capacity. So tell me a little bit about how that, you know, how districts can work maybe in shifting the mindset in these two camps.
Certainly. So Dana, when the book first came out in May of 2019, you know, the reaction I found was kind of in three different places. Initially, some folks were right in the middle of the road and they were like, yep, this is exactly what we need. You met us right where we needed it. And then, as you mentioned, there were other folks that kind of came out on either side of the spectrum. So there were some individuals who said, we're completely on board with this concept of personalized professional learning, but admittedly, we don't even have the learning culture in place among our adults to be able to start tackling or integrating some of these pieces just yet. Mm-hmm. We need to build their social emotional capacity and develop a stronger learning culture among ourselves to be able to put some of these steps towards personalized learning in place, not just for our students, but for our adults. And then there was a second group of individuals who came forward and said, yep, that was it. That's great. But I need help with my facilitators. We've got these amazing teacher leaders who are absolute rock stars in the classroom. And we can do, you know, we can take the steps necessary as a school or a district to provide the infrastructure for personalized professional learning. But we need additional support to coach them as facilitators to really understand what those principles look like from a design perspective and a facilitative one to make sure that the opportunities we're offering are as powerful as they can potentially be.
And I think that potential is there in a lot of schools and districts for those teachers to become facilitators. Several teachers I've worked with, I've mentioned that to them, like, you know, you share a lot of passion in your classroom. Of course, not everybody can shift as easily or as well suited to, you know, working with adults as with children. But I think in general, there are not enough teachers that they're kind of given or maybe pushed into that opportunity to become facilitators. So I think it's recognizing the leadership potential in our teachers, correct?
Absolutely, Dana. And that's one of the first questions that I ask when I begin work with a district or a school. So we engage in some initial data analysis together, looking at student achievement and growth data, looking at observation data from teachers, doing a needs assessment across the system around professional learning, both in terms of topic as well as time of day and, you know, interest areas, things of that nature. But once we've sort of gathered that data and analyzed it, my very mm-hmm. next question is, who do you have in this space that can do mm-hmm. this work well? Mm-hmm. They might not be the best facilitator, but in terms of content expertise or strategy acquisition and implementation, they've got what it takes to replicate that across classrooms, right? So mm-hmm. how do we leverage that power from within and help those individuals become even stronger adult facilitators in perhaps the same way that they are student facilitators, so that we're able to build on those internal strengths and not always hire experts from the outside to be presenting PD to our staff?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so important. I like the leveraging the power from within. Let's talk a little bit about your second book. So you're in the editing phase, and that'll be out in early 2022. So what is that about?
So kind of going back to that first camp that I mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. The folks who said, you know what, Allie, like these concepts are great, but we don't have the learning culture in place. Mm-hmm. We've got to build some of that educator social emotional capacity. And I think we have all felt this perhaps way more than we anticipated over the course of the past year and a half. But what's interesting is I already had a lot of that work in place and sort of in, you know, in the works as we headed into sort of the pandemic time that we've all mm-hmm. experienced. But this work really looks specifically at ways in which we can lean into our own strengths mm-hmm. and better understand the other adults in our building okay. so that we're not just developing our pedagogical craft, but developing those social emotional skills to model those for our students as well. So okay. looking at the idea of attunement, do we really know who we are, and are we able to bring our best and most effective selves to our professional settings? Mm-hmm. Looking at a principle of alignment, are we able to set both personal and professional goals for ourselves and ensure that our day-to-day actions are aligning with those goals? Because okay. time and time again, that's what's leading to burnout with educators, is what we're spending the most of our time doing during the school day isn't necessarily getting us closer to the goals that we may have set professionally or personally for ourselves. So really getting into the social emotional components of what it means to be an educator at all levels of the system mm-hmm. and ensure that we're building that capacity along with our instructional and leadership capacity as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I really like kind of focusing on the different roles, right? How you can not just work on social emotional skills for the teachers or for classified staff, but also for the leaders, you know, just kind of knowing at this time as we shift into second semester of the 21-22 school year, you know, there are a lot of openings, right? And it's not just at the teacher level, it's also at the administrative level. So, right, you know, focusing on the needs and helping those teachers and leaders find out what, you know, they can do to take some time. And I'm looking forward to that book coming out. And I think it's a timely topic.
Absolutely. And I'm really trying to move us from a place of constant recharge, right? Like we have those mm-hmm. quick bursts of, oh, let me take, you know, a couple hours here or a couple hours there, or I'll squeeze mm-hmm. in a quick mm-hmm. run, to a place of true recovery, where how do mm-hmm. we find our rhythm in such a way that this work is sustainable over time. I tell teachers and leaders all the time, you know, we don't just need you for overtime. We need you for the whole season. We need you for mm-hmm. the long game to be able to continue to push through in a way that's both sustainable, but also effective for you as a team member and for our students.
Mm-hmm. This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get back to the episode.
Mm-hmm. That's so important. So you do professional speaking and keynoting, and there is the ASCD Leadership Summit that is online. Tell me when that will be available for members.
So the Leadership Summit is available for registration now. The sessions will be going live mid to late January, and those mm-hmm. recordings will be available after the session as well. I've had lots of great conversations with a number of the presenters who have been you're getting their sessions together. And I'm excited not only to get into a number of those sessions myself, but to also have the opportunity to continue to explore some of those resources and collaborate with folks in the month that follows the conference. I think that's one of the nice byproducts of sort of this time is we've gotten comfortable with a more hybrid version of professional learning where some of it might be pre-recorded, some of it might be live, but what's most exciting for me is that that learning often continues beyond the scheduled session itself and that we have an opportunity to keep those connections and conversations going.
Yeah, and I attended one myself, and even though it might be a pre-recorded session, the speaker is live on the chat, and then you know, you get a lot of interaction with the other participants live, other than, you know, some virtual conferences I've spoken at where you send in your session and then it's, you know, aired on a certain date and, you know, people view it whenever. This is, at least people are viewing it all at the same time usually, but if you miss it that third week of January, as you said, people can access the recordings through ASCD.
Yep, absolutely. And a number of facilitators have also been, you know, in their recordings, mentioning different ways to connect with them beyond the session to keep those conversations and communities going as well.
So you also have some PD courses available on your website. Tell me a little bit about some of those that might still be in production that might come out, but you're also consulting 3 days a week with your former school. So tell me about some of the day-to-day work that you do.
Certainly. So I had the opportunity over the course of this past year to pilot some different virtual courses and see what was going to stick and resonate with folks. And I'm excited over the course of 2022 to do a release of different pieces, some of which are related to the content of the upcoming book. So you can look for a series of mini courses that dig into each of those principles of social emotional capacity building. And my hope is that it's in bite-sized chunks where educators, regardless of your position, are able to kind of, you know, jump in and jump out as you have the time and the energy to do so. So those will be some asynchronous opportunities for folks, with also providing a community for synchronous collaboration as folks wish to opt in. And then I'm also excited to release a course specifically for professional learning facilitators. So that one will come closer to the spring as folks are, you know, sort of gearing up to plan professional learning for the fall. And then we'll also do a reboot of that in the fall for folks who might not quite be in the headspace to tackle it at the end of the year. But that will be more of a synchronous virtual course where we'll walk through over the course of 5 weeks, different components together to ensure that the professional learning that facilitators are planning is as personalized as it can potentially be for the learners in their community. And then in terms of heading back to my former school, this is, you know, talk about a twist of COVID, I guess. I'm not even sure, you know, what to refer to things as anymore. But earlier, Dana, you mentioned, you know, the staffing shortage and some of the burnout that we're experiencing. And one of the things that I was finding is that while some schools were in a place to begin taking some of those steps in professional learning, others were quite honestly just looking to open the doors for the first time to students physically. And, you know, just kind of depending on where you are and what your context is, I feel as though we're still in very different places. So this fall, I've had the opportunity to consult with my former school 3 days a week, being able to be there right there on site. It helps me still have keys to the building and know most of the team. But it's been great to support them, not just from an operational standpoint in helping to open safely as a former administrator, but from, you know, sort of that wellness standpoint, being there to be able to kind of talk through things with folks, hear those challenges, be able to be a thought partner through some of those potential solutions, I think has been one of the most powerful parts of the work for me.
Yeah. And I think if all schools were able to have somebody that could just work with them and help them through these challenges, that'd be great. But, you know, we don't have enough of you to go around, you know, to be able to at least see kind of from the outside, right? Looking in. And, you know, like you said, the operational thing, I think some of the leaders in a mastermind group I'm in, you know, they're really frustrated because they're working so much on the operational end of the putting out fires this past semester and not really doing any of the leadership work. So
it's so true, Dana. And, you know, I even felt myself, so I I am a board member in my town. And I have certainly sort of, you know, helped our district kind of navigate some of these pieces the past year and a half from a policy and a, you know, personnel standpoint, I guess, if you will, but I felt it was important to get back on the ground, to get, you know, more consistently into the same building and really understand, as you mentioned, you know, what are those operational challenges that schools are facing, not just from the outside looking in, but to be able to feel that and experience the weight of that day to day, I think is incredibly important, particularly for someone whose work is focused on that continuous learning, right? To be able to understand the perspective that learners are and educators are in this space is a really important part of the work.
So tell me a little bit about how you got started working with ASCD, kind of what fueled the passion for adult learning. You talked a little bit about, you know, when you're working on the admin internship, but you said you were an instructional coach before becoming an AP. And I think, I haven't been an instructional coach myself, but I've worked a lot with instructional coaches, both as a teacher and administrator, and not everybody has instructional coaches. So kind of going into that role, you know, what did you see as something at your school that needed to change?
That instructional coach role, I felt, gave me perhaps the most headspace, if you will, to really focus exclusively on instructional leadership. And in some ways, I wish I could go back because I don't know if I truly valued what I had at the time, right? So you transition from, I moved from that role, as you mentioned, into an assistant principal role where clearly you have all different other types of responsibilities, you know, looking at my role as a board member now, but there's this special, you know, spot as an instructional coach where you not only have the opportunity to build relationships one-on-one with teachers and other staff members in the building, but to also really take a step back and look at what are some of the strengths and growth opportunities holistically that we might be able to leverage as well as sort of fill within our professional learning offerings. And that's where a lot of this work was really born, because I had the opportunity to be incredibly reflective, to look at data focused on instruction, to be able to have those one-on-one conversations and see what approaches and strategies and resources were resonating with teachers and those that just weren't. And that really informed a lot of my work as I began to, you know, kind of create structures and systems for how this might look on a larger scale.
And you said even when you were going through your admin prep program, you had conversations with assistant principals about personalizing PD. What kind of reactions did you get? Was that kind of something new to them, or, you know, were you kind of thinking outside the box in terms of your system? A lot of people were just happy with the sit and get, or?
So I don't think people were happy with the sit and get, but they were also intimidated by the constraints and the challenges that this model might present, right? So, and I think that's why in the book, I really tried to tackle as many of the troubleshooting pieces as I potentially could. So, you know, when this challenge happens, here are some of the different ways you can approach it. Because I think, you know, in my leadership coaching work now, as well as some of those early years, that was constantly the question was, well, what happens when this person does this or says this or tries this, right? What is our collective response to make sure that we're as consistent as possible in this work? And I don't think that's an admin challenge that's unique to professional learning, right? That's an admin challenge that's unique to, you know, how are we handling PTO days when this situation arises or that one? It's a universal challenge, but I don't know that we have thought about it as much within the context of PD. So for me, it was being in a place where I could almost, you know, think three steps ahead as to what some of those challenges or questions might be, and then ensure that as a leadership team, we were prepared to adequately and appropriately respond to them. And some of that came through conversations internally as well as externally with some districts who were similarly starting to dabble in this space, but hadn't kind of embraced it, you know, wholeheartedly just yet.
Yeah. And I think it's also, like you said, it's whether or not you started this work, you know, close to 10 years ago, there are still a lot of districts that might just be dabbling, right? That might just be starting over the course of the pandemic to have discovered the need for personalized PD and having, you know, teachers choose more what fits them. So Very, very timely, I think, for educators and leaders out there to purchase your book that's currently out there and the one that's coming out. But I also mentioned in the bio that you've written for Education Week Q&A and Edutopia. So do you have a few pieces that you'd like to just share with listeners?
Certainly. So in EdWeek's classroom Q&A, I had an opportunity to kind of think through, you know, how do we see mistakes as an opportunity for growth? And it's a collective piece that had voices from a number of different educators. So it's great to see the variety of perspectives in responding to that prompt. But, you know, not being afraid to make mistakes, whether we're a teacher or a leader, and modeling that for our students, I think is an incredibly important skill. And then similarly, some of the other coaching pieces came through in the Edutopia piece. So I had an opportunity to co-write that with a colleague of mine, Brandon Johnson, who's an administrator in Texas, and think through, you know, what does coaching look like, not just when you're sitting, you know, in that chair as a teacher, but when you're sitting in a variety of other positions across the educational spectrum as well.
Great. And I'll put links to that in the show notes. Well, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing you'd like listeners to remember?
I would love listeners to remember that even when days are incredibly difficult and you feel like you're stuck in the trenches and you can't see around that corner, that the focus just needs to be on getting 1% better. You don't have to have all the answers. You don't have to have, you know, the perfect lesson plan or the perfect strategic plan to take to your board. But what is the one thing that you can do today in this moment to be just a little bit better than you might've been this morning?
Yeah. So important. You know, every day, you know, presents new opportunities, right? So wake up with that question. How can you make it a little bit better than yesterday? Great. Where can people connect with you and find you online?
So you are welcome to explore my website at www.thelearningloop.com. I have a number of free resources available there, as well as links to articles and interviews that you can explore. And then please follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at The Learning Loop. And I love responding and connecting with folks in that space so that we can continue to elevate and amplify one another's work.
I'll make sure those links are in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the Out of the Trenches podcast today. It was a pleasure having you on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the invitation. I appreciate it.
Check out the show notes on danagoodyear.com to learn more about this guest and links to their social media. Please subscribe, share, rate, and review wherever you download this podcast. Tell your friends and colleagues about it, and if this episode resonates especially with you, be sure to share it out on social media and tag me at Out of Trenches PC.